This is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
I have often been asked, why did you become a doctor? What made you take up medicine in the first place? Well, the truth of the matter is that, in my case, there isn't one simple answer to those questions. And I'm afraid that all the answers put together wouldn't add up to a very inspiring tale. But some years ago, though, I put a similar question to a colleague of mine. And his answer had all the makings of a fascinating story. A story which I've called Determination.
Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step with the doctors who were there. Medical File.
I first met Giles Rudden several years ago at a graduation ceremony held at what I like to think of as the finest medical school in the country. Need I add that I studied and qualified there. I remember that I was surprised when he told me that he, too, was celebrating his last days as a student, and that he'd been Dr. Giles Rudden for only a few hours. The fact of the matter was that he was obviously several years older than his fellow ex-students. I offered my congratulations and best wishes for his future. And at the end of the evening, we parted with the usual, see you again sometime. It was, in fact, some considerable time before we met again. This time, at a cocktail party. Our hostess, convinced that we must have a great deal in common, made a point of introducing us.
Yes, of course, we have met. Some years ago.
Yes, a Hilda graduation, of course. Well, how are you?
May I misquote Belloc? When it's good, it's very, very good.
And when it's bad, it's horrid.
That's about it.
What are you doing these days?
Not a very exciting answer to that, I'm afraid. I'm GPing. Got a practice up in Essex. Worcester, you know it.
Worcester, yes, I've been through it, I think. You know, Colchester was a happy hunting ground for me in my misspent youth.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, what brings you to this part of the world?
I'm staying with the Goslings for a few days.
Oh, yes, yes, I have met them a couple of times.
David Gosling's a half-cousin, at least three times removed. Monica insisted on dragging me along here. Oh, dear, I hope I haven't said the wrong thing.
No, of course not.
I'm afraid I hate cocktail parties.
Oh, that's something else we have in common. I was also dragged along under protest.
Funny thing, isn't it? Only a week ago, I couldn't wait to get away from Mrs. Ramsbottom and her rheumatics and little Aggie and her adenoids. I honestly believe that if I had to listen to one more tale of woe about gastrics, I'd scream.
You must have made those names up. But I can see you have been in it long enough to realize there isn't very much romance or glamour in the medical profession.
Oh, I never did have any illusions about that.
But what were you going to say?
Just that I've been away from the place for a mere 2 days, and I can't wait to get back.
Yes, which only goes to prove that you love your work.
I should do.
May I ask you a very personal question?
Why not? And I think I can guess what it is. I've been asked before. For years, I was the oldest undergrad Hilda's has ever known. It's a longish story.
Well, the party's only just begun. We have plenty of time ahead of us.
It all really started, I suppose, with a tonsillectomy. My own. I was 12 at the time. It was the first time ever in hospital. Looking back in a funny sort of way, I enjoyed it. You know what it's like at that age. I was the only youngster in the ward. Everybody made a fuss of me. I enjoyed being the center of attraction. And I'd had a real operation that I could talk about when it was all over. What little discomfort I suffered was a small enough price to pay.
Well, how are you today, young man?
I'm all right, thank you.
Still a bit sore, and I can't swallow very well, but I'm all right.
Well, I must say, all our lives would be a lot easier if everyone complained as little as you do, dear. Now, come on, up you get. Let me straighten that bed of yours. There. That's better. We shall miss you when you go, you know.
Oh, but that's not going to be soon, is it?
Well, I don't know, dear. It's not for me to say. We'll see what the doctor has to say when he does his rounds. But, you know, I expect he'll let you out tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Well, now, I do believe you sound disappointed. You're a funny one, to be sure.
Oh, it's not that, really.
You want to get out of here as soon as you can. You must get back to your friends and your school. Hospital is no place to stay for a moment longer than you have to.
You're here all the time. You and the doctors and everybody.
Well, it's different for us, dear. We work here.
I'm going to work in a hospital when I leave school.
Are you?
I don't mean work. I'm not going to be an orderly or a porter, anything like that. Going to be a doctor.
Well, you have to work hard at school to do that, then.
It's all right. I'm always top of the class anyway.
Good for you. But it takes a lot of work and a long time.
I don't care. I made up my mind. I'm going to be a doctor, even if it takes 100 years.
And from that day on, there was never any doubt in the boy's mind. Although he didn't always find it easy to convince other people. His parents were poor. His father worked as a wagon overseer at the open face of a clay pit, part of the local brickworks. They were both called on to make many sacrifices to keep Giles at the grammar school, which he attended as a scholarship boy. But they were determined to give him what they had both been denied, a good education. About 3 years after Giles' brief spell in hospital, his mother was asked to go and see the headmaster at the school, a summons that she obeyed with some trepidation.
Come in, Mrs. Rowden. Come and sit down.
Thanks, sir.
Well, now.
You said you wanted to see me about something, sir.
That's right, Mrs. Rowden. I want to talk to you about Giles.
Oh, isn't it any sort of trouble, is he, sir? I mean, if he's been up to any...
No, it isn't anything like that. In fact, he's what one might call a model pupil. His record is impressive. There is no doubt in my mind that Giles is university potential.
Oh, the thing is, though, sir, to tell you the truth, I don't think we can manage it. We're not well-to-do folk, you understand. My husband works hard, and he's a good man with money. But they don't pay him much where he is, and... Well, we can hardly afford to keep Giles at school.
Yes, I understand.
Well, what we were thinking was if he could get a job in an office or something like that, then he'd be able to help out at home a bit, you know. That extra money would be very useful.
I can't help thinking it a waste of his potential, Mrs. Rowden.
Sir, have you said anything to the boy about this, sir? I wouldn't want ideas put into his head.
Well, with due respect, he seems to have ideas already.
Him wanting to be a doctor, you mean?
Mm.
Oh, has he been on to you about that?
He did mention it.
Oh, well. We've tried to make him see it's out of the question.
Oh, I don't think it is out of the question. I think he could be a doctor. Now, let me explain. From what I can see, there's every chance his examination results at the end of his school career will be good enough for him to get a keen scholarship. And there are bursaries and grants provided for the simple purpose of helping people like Giles.
You mean he could get university free?
Well, most of it, I think. He would still need money, of course, to keep himself going, but from what I know of him, he won't be averse to working when he can.
Seems a lot to ask his father, though, sir. He's done very well by Giles already.
Indeed he has, Mrs. Rowden. You both have.
I'll talk it over with my husband tonight. We've always tried to do the right thing.
It wasn't an easy decision for the couple to make. And this was all taking place in the 1930s. At a time when real poverty existed among the workers in a truly class-conscious society. These days, reforms in the educational system have made such decisions far less onerous. After a great deal of thought and talk, they decided to forego the financial help they'd looked forward to for so long. At the end of his school life, he lived up to his headmaster's expectations and secured a scholarship to the medical school known affectionately as Hilda's.
So, you're leaving us, Rodden.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to have a few words with you before you left. You know, we're all proud of you, Rodden.
Thank you very much, sir.
You've been a great credit to us and to yourself.
Thank you, sir.
But don't forget us. Keep in touch. Let us know how you're getting on. But whatever happens, don't stop.
I don't think there's any fear of that, sir. Mm. I know how lucky I am to have been able to get this far.
You know, it's not going to be easy for you.
Never has been easy to be poor, sir.
I wonder if you remember what I said. When was it, 5 years ago, six? You know, when your mother and father brought you here to see whether you were eligible for the Founders Scholarship Grant. Do you remember?
Not really, sir.
I said then that young men of your age, a boy as you were then, are going to have to face serious responsibilities. People thought I was a bit of a crank in those days. Some people still do. The signs are all there, Arden. That war didn't end 20 years ago. Of that, I'm sure.
Haven't thought much about that, sir.
No, you're young. One doesn't expect the young to think of such things. But you're going to have to fight. And you're going to have to win, too, if this country, possibly the whole world, is going to survive.
This was to be another prophecy of the headmaster's that came true. The world went to war. And Giles Rowden, like so many young men of his age, went off to fight for king and country in the name of a cause he knew so little about. Not surprisingly, he volunteered for and was accepted by the Royal Army Medical Corps, with whom he served for the duration of the war.
It was a strange thing, though by no means unique, I suppose. Many men have served as I did must have experienced the same feeling. While it was all going on, there was no time to think of the lives that we'd left behind us. The war brought about total change. And there were always the optimists, the "it will all be over by Christmas" school of thought. But many couldn't know, didn't dare to guess or hope. Plans for when it was all over didn't feature too strongly. There was always so much to do, especially in our unit, and the constant fear that you might be on the next casualty list. But I was lucky. I came through it all unscathed.
So good to have you back, Charles.
It is, I'm glad to be back. Seems silly somehow, doesn't it?
I know what you mean. Oh, I was so worried about you all the time.
You didn't have to worry about me. I was all right.
That's not true, and you know it.
No. I was worried about you. When I heard about Father, I didn't know how you'd cope.
Oh, people were very good.
Tell me what happened.
There isn't much to tell. There was an air raid. They went for the brickworks. One of the wagons broke loose. Your father couldn't get out from the way of it. The doctor said he must have died instantly. He didn't suffer, praise be. We had to get out of the house, of course. He wanted it for a workman. They explained it all very nicely. But it was a tired house, and we always knew we had to get out of it one day.
There are going to be a few changes in this country, Mother. That you can be sure.
Oh, I don't worry too much. We managed. Oh, we were very lucky to get this place. Housing's very short.
Yeah, I can see.
I'd get a little bit of widow's pension, of course, and your father had always put a shilling or two away in the insurance. I've got a little job I go to, mornings only. They don't pay much, but they're very nice, and they don't exactly work me to death.
And Gladys?
Ah, she's not strong at all, Giles. But now, you're not to start worrying yourself about us. You've got yourself to think about. What do you think you'll do?
I don't know. I haven't thought much about it. There'll be enough people around looking for jobs. I'll find something.
But you always had your heart set on doctoring. I promised your headmaster that I wouldn't stand in your way. Your father and I agreed that you had to have a chance.
But you didn't bargain for all this.
Giles.
You're not standing in my way. There's no question of that. But if you think I'm going to go back to Hilda's while you scrimp along here like this with Gladys Hillmost at the time, then you made a mistake.
It's Not just a dream you had, child. You know that. Even the headmaster said there was no reason in the world why you shouldn't become a doctor.
Being a doctor isn't the beginning or the end of the world. I'll find something.
Well, just don't you be in too much of a hurry, that's all. After what you've been through, it won't hurt you to wait a while. Think about it carefully. Take your time.
They were wise words. It was good advice. And many a returning serviceman home from the war was told the same sort of thing. But we were young. We'd missed so much of life. We were impatient to get on with it. I was lucky. I got a job, and I was able to settle down without too much trouble.
Giles Rowden, sit down. I've got a bone to pick with you.
Yes, Mother. What have I done?
Oh, I'm not cross, anything like that. I'm just worried about you.
There's no need for anybody in the world to worry about
me. All the same, Giles, I want to talk to you about your doctorate.
Oh, we've been over all that before.
I know we have, and we're going to go through it again.
It's all over, Mother. It's a thing of the past.
I was doing a bit of spring cleaning in your room this morning.
Huh? What?
You're not exactly the tidiest man I know. I thought I'd tidy your clothes cupboard. Just about all I found was books. Dozens of them. And every one of them a medical book, no less.
Huh?
You're still anchoring after it, aren't you? You say no, but I know that deep down you're still anchoring.
They're the books I had when I started before the war.
I may look green, Giles, and I may be a bit slow. It doesn't take a genius to read. Well, a lot of those books were bought from Scurry's bookshop. And that wasn't there before the war. And you weren't making notes in ballpoint pen either. And another thing. When you were doing your first year at that place, you weren't reading a handbook for third-year students. Well, what do you say to that?
There isn't much I can say, is there? So I'm buying and reading medical books.
Well, just don't try and tell me that you've given it up.
You're right, Elizabeth. Well, half right. I haven't really given it up, as you call it. It's just at the moment it's not possible. And I don't want to change any of the things in my life that make it impossible. I really don't resent anything. I'm very happy. But I am still interested in medicine. And I love reading about it. Soon I shall have finished my final year reading. How's that?
Well, that's not going to make you a doctor.
No, I know that, but you were talking a minute ago about what you thought I was thinking. Feeling deep down. You said I was hankering. Well, I'm not. But what I do feel is that one day it may be possible. I don't know how or why, but if it does work out like that, I don't want to be in a position where I can't. Do you know what I mean? There comes a time in a man's life when he can't start learning.
Well, you were always a determined one. I'll say that for you. But with all that reading, you must already know a lot more than many a doctor.
No, that's not true. Because you need lectures and training and practical experience. And I don't know much less than they do. Some of them.
And Giles Rowden continued his reading. Until he'd read and reread those final year books. And all the time, he was working in the building contractor's office. By now, he was thoroughly experienced, his employer's right-hand man and trusted confidant. One day, he was called to see his employer at a contract site. It was late afternoon, the site was deserted, work had stopped for the day. But apparently, there were problems.
I swear we went wrong, Giles. You see what I mean?
Yeah, we were over-optimistic, eh?
It's my fault. But you can't think of everything. There just isn't access room enough. The turnaround is too slow. We're running too high expenses.
Well, like you, I thought there was room enough. I didn't bargain on having men standing idle waiting for so long. Oh, you can see the figures here.
Aye, I've seen them all. But what I had in mind was to get all the men on to building another access ramp over on the other side in the morning.
Well, it'll take the best part of the day.
Well, maybe better in the long run. Perhaps we'll be able to catch up on lost time. Hey, come over here and I'll show you what I mean.
Mr. Rich? Mr. Rich?
The boss, moving but a few feet ahead of me, lost his footing. He stumbled and fell from the scaffolding into an excavation prepared for foundations. Unaccountably, the scaffolding collapsed, bringing down with it planks and equipment weighing hundreds of pounds. Now he was lying below me, buried under it all, and silent. The building site was deserted. There was nobody to call to for help, and I knew that it would take time for me to find help from the streets outside. I was able to improvise with materials available on the site and managed to splint the pelvis, upper torso and neck, as well as an obviously broken leg. Only then did I leave the still unconscious man to summon help. Within a matter of a quarter of an hour, he was on his way to hospital.
It was many weeks before the injured man was able to return to his business. But during that time, Giles Rowden ran the company very successfully, to his employer's relief and, of course, delight.
I can't tell you how grateful I am to you for everything you've done while I've been in here, Giles.
Oh, it hasn't amounted to very much, Mr. Rich.
Oh, but aye, it has.
Although I will admit I shan't be sorry to have you back there to make some of the decisions.
Well, that won't be long, lad. The doctor says no more than a day or two before I can get out. And a couple of weeks' convalescence before I start working.
Yes, you mustn't be in too much of a hurry. You've taken a lot of punishment.
But when I do get out, I'm not at all sure that I want you there in the office.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
I've been doing a lot of thinking and talking about you, Giles. The doctors here tell me that you saved me life.
That's nonsense.
No, it isn't, lad. If it hadn't been for you and your knowing what you were doing, I could have bled to death before help could get near. If you'd done something silly like move me before I was splinted, anything could have happened. So, I mean what I say. You saved my life.
Now, it's just lucky that I have an unusual taste in reading matter, that's all.
Now, you don't know it, because I've asked them not to say anything about it, but I've talked to your mother and your girl about this unusual taste of yours.
Yes?
I'll tell you what I want to do, Giles. I'm prepared to put you through medical school.
It's too late for that now, Mr. Rich.
It's never too late to do anything, Giles, especially something you've always dreamed of doing.
But I've always been something of a charity case. I managed to get to a good school because somebody else was prepared to pay. I did the best part of a year at medical school at Hilda's as a scholarship student. And now I'm getting a bit old for that sort of thing. I'm earning a good living. I'm independent.
So you always will be. Look, if it hurts your pride to accept a gift, take what it costs as a loan. You'll have plenty of time ahead of you. You're still young, even if you are a bit older than the other students.
Don't know what to say, Mr. Rich.
You don't have to say anything at the moment. But think it over, lad.
I did think it over, of course, but it didn't take me long to realize that I'd be a fool not to take Mr. Rich up on his offer. And so I was able to realize my life's ambition.
And became Dr. Giles Rowden.
As you said, it's really a glamorous life. My practice is not an overly large one. I haven't got any rich private patients. I get a bit tired sometimes of headaches and sniffles, of chilblains. I wouldn't be anything else. And I wouldn't want to do anything else. Yeah, I warned you it was a long story.
No, it's done me good to hear it. Oh, look at the time. I must get away and make my farewells.
Yeah, I think I must too. It's been nice to meet you again.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, Doctor. I wouldn't want to be anything else, and I wouldn't want to do anything else. That's probably the best reason in the world for wanting to be a doctor, to take up medicine.
medical file, the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives. Listen again next week for another true story from Medical File.